Welcome in to a Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins, and for the next 3 hours, we want to open your mind if we may. We've done that from time to time, given it a few expansion techniques. But the mind, of course, is something we want to deal with tonight. But more than the mind, the spirit. Those very basic things about yourself that you need to get in touch with. And we have a way to get in touch with them. And we're going to do that with something that you are most likely familiar with. It may have perplexed you from time to time. It may have awakened you and frightened you. It may have caused you to wonder. It's called a dream. Have you ever wondered about a dream? Have you ever been fascinated by a dream? Has it taken you on trips of fancy? Has it frightened you? Has it portended things for you? Has it bored you? Well, all of those things, I think, probably can happen in the world of the dream. And it's one thing for me to wonder about them and for you to wonder about them and for us to be perplexed by them and certainly mystified by them and sometimes awed by them. And you hear very beautiful music with them and see wonderful sights and sordid sights and crazy sights. How about talking to somebody who knows dreams? Well, that's what we're going to be. It is our little dream trip on a Saturday night tonight. Dr. Arthur Bernard, welcome to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill. That's quite an introduction. My gosh. I was mesmerized in a dream world listening to you.
Listen, dreams have done me in time and time again. Have done me up and done me down and just divorced me. And there will be periods in which I don't even have dreams. And, you know, I miss them. But my dreams are always in color.
Well, most creative people's dreams are in color.
People tell me they have black and white dreams, and I don't understand that.
Well,
that's a good turn up to Cormaco. And you know.
Put a filter through, through that. But that's not entirely true, because in laboratory studies, it's been proven that most people do dream in color, except they forget the color very rapidly.
Really?
And they remember the action, the movement, the feelings, but the color fades very, very rapidly. So rarely do people dream in black and white. They may remember it in black and white as they recall the dream. In laboratory studies, when they've awakened people, and the first thing they ask the person is, what were the colors? And the people with fairly accurate statements recall the colors.
Mm. Give us a little bit of background about you, Arthur. Where are you from, and what are you doing, and why are you here?
Okay, well, I'm a psychologist and a marriage, family, child counselor. And I have a dream center in Sherman Oaks, and I do individual couple counseling. But I also specialize in doing dream work. I teach people how to use and understand their dreams. I train therapists, psychologists, and psychotherapists how to use dreams. And actually, what led me to dreams was when I went into psychotherapy 27 years ago. And I think it's worth mentioning to you, Bill. The analyst after the first session said to me, and by the way, make sure if you have a dream to write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I don't remember my dreams. And he said, well, you will. And I said, well, why? Why are they important? He said, sit down. I have a story to tell you. And very briefly, I think it is worth mentioning. The story was, it was his first big case. It was a minister's son who had been drafted into the armed forces, was sent to Europe during World War II as a chaplain. Chaplains are not supposed to fight. The Germans launched a surprise offensive near the end of the war. He had to help defend the camp, and he killed two German soldiers in hand-to-hand combat. He literally throttled them to death, and his mind snapped. He was sent back to the States, in and out of VA hospitals. The Army is not very sympathetic to situations like that, especially in wartime. And he had this repetitive nightmare that the psychiatrists, Army psychiatrists, would not deal with, and they poo-pooed it. He had good periods and bad periods, and finally, when he was out of the hospital during a good period, he heard about this analyst that I was working with, and made an appointment, came in, sat down, and said, Dr. So-and-so, look, this is what I have done. And I have a repetitive nightmare 4 or 5 times a week, and I wake up in a cold sweat. You're a big man with the dreams. Tell me what it means. The dream was roughly he was back on the battlefield. He was sitting down, getting ready to eat a piece of strawberry shortcake. In front of him were two dead German soldiers. Their eyes had been gouged out. As he took the first piece of strawberry shortcake, went to put it in his mouth, he noticed that the strawberries were the eyes of the dead German soldiers, and he was about to ingest them. And he woke up terrified. So the analyst looked at him and said, "Well, I think I know what your problem is." The man leaned forward and said, "What is it?"
"Don't eat strawberry shortcake."
And the analyst said, he pointed his finger at this man, and he said, "You, my man, are a murderer and a killer, and you loved it." And the man jumped up, let out a scream, and took off. Ran down the hall, down the steps, across the street, jumped in his car, and was gone. Of course, a week later, he called back, made an appointment, came in, sat down, and said, "You have taken tons off my shoulders." He said, "I never could admit that part of me enjoyed that experience, because the strawberry shortcake was dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And under certain conditions, one really has to accept the fact that we all could kill. We all could murder in a rage of self-protection." And once he could understand...
semantics, a man is going to kill you, or you're going to kill him. And so, you enjoy killing him rather than enjoy him killing you.
So I looked at that and I said, "My gosh, you can tell that from a dream." And that's when I began studying my dreams. And I had a dream that told me to open the Dream Center 10 years ago. I wanted to specialize in something when I became a therapist. And this dream told me, "Open the Dream Center." And that's how I came into existence.
You have done it. You've opened the Dream Center. I must tell you, Arthur, that in the years that I have been doing this show, one of the things that comes up quite often in many of the conversations we have with the psychic people and the transmediums, or as we get into things metaphysical, is the question of dreams. And what do they mean? And we've had people to look at dreams and talk about them a little bit. I have not really paid that much attention to dreams, although I certainly realize the importance of a dream, or sometimes just the nonsense of a dream, or the absence of a dream. They can be precognitive.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly can be very revealing. They're always telling you something, they're playing you back something, or maybe they're just entertaining you. Maybe you need to have. But I think that the interesting thing that you seem to be getting into is that this is a great facet of life. This is a part of your makeup. And like any other part of life, it should be something that is very constructive and progressive and evolving for you, rather than something that's just floating around all of the time, which has little or no meaning, or sometimes provocation. Can we work with dreams? Can we use them?
Absolutely.
Isn't that what they're for?
The dreams are for our basic growing awareness, to help us see where we're blind.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have a limited conscious mind. And I think that the unconscious mind is much broader, much vaster, and can hold many more ideas. And I think it can see much clearer. I think dreams are really much closer to the truth of a person than his conscious mind. I think the conscious mind is messed up. Actually,
we know that going in.
And I think that the unconscious mind tries to straighten us out.
It has its problems.
I see. Certainly does. I mean, I can't understand why people dismiss dreams as irrelevant. You know, we have all kinds of internal mechanisms. There's a central intelligence that regulates our metabolism, that regulates our kidney functions, our pulse rate, our blood pressure. And if something goes wrong, there's adjustments in the body.
You see, you're reading my mind. Because I wanted to ask you, because I was going to take a break here, where do dreams come from? And you touched upon something that perhaps is very vital. See, we explore that in the middle. You call it a central intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
I call it a spiritual intelligence, which is quite different than your biological intelligence.
I think you're accurate.
Let's get into that in just a second, shall we? Dr. Arthur Bernard is my guest tonight. It's Open Mind. Our subject is a part of yours, the dream. Something that touched a touchstone for those of us here on Open Mind, that there was a central kind of intelligence, and I suggested to you it was a spiritual intelligence that seemed to be regulating everything, and perhaps even those dreams, which is the reason those dreams can be so terribly fascinating. Where do you go from there?
Well, I think there is, I think there are many different levels of dreams. And perhaps it's just a matter of semantics. Dreams come through the subconscious mind. They come from the physical body through the subconscious mind. They can come from our emotional body. They can even come from other people. Or, as you say, the spiritual mind. I think they can even come from the universal mind.
Same kind of thing, I suppose.
Well,
maybe even more.
Perhaps even more. I think those kinds of dreams, you never forget. Those are big dreams. And when you have one of those, you wake up and you go, oh my gosh, and you immediately must share it with someone else. You cannot keep that kind of dream to yourself. And I think the reason is that it belongs to everyone. It belongs to all of humanity. It usually is a statement for all of us. The usual everyday jetsam, flotsam dreams you often don't share. But a big dream, that you must...
Something that moves
talk.
You.
Yeah. It moves you it. Internally. I think dreams, as I mentioned a moment ago, also come from the physical body.
Mm-hmm.
I think this spiritual mind or central intelligence...
Works with all of that.
All of it. Works with the whole system. And of course, some dreams are more important than other dreams. But I think all of them have some significance.
But dreams just do so many fascinating things.
I have heard music that I could never buy in my dreams. Huge orchestras and choruses playing. And I'm sitting there keeping time, and my wife says, what are you doing? Don't wake me up. I said, I wish you could come to the concert.
You're listening to the inner music.
She's used to that for
sure.
Me. I said, I wish I knew how to write music. I'd like to write this down. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you go on trips of what seem to be fantasy. Sometimes you relive in some sort of an abstract or very real way some of the things that are on your mind that maybe happened that day or another day.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things you dream seem to come around and be.
Dreams?
You dream them before they happen.
Well, I'm not so sure that you dream them before they happen.
Oh,
I think you're dreaming them as they're happening.
Now, a couple of days before, or a week before, I think I have to say often as it was before.
Well, I know, but they're happening in the psychic state at that moment. It just takes a while for the physical state
to
catch up to it.
There is no time or no space in that realm that sometimes I think dreams come from, if not all of the time.
Right. The laws of time and space are just defined.
That's right. We move in a linear way. Our mind doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it is from our mind, or from our spiritual intelligence, or from our touch of the many facets of information that come to this mind of ours, this brain of ours, which are certainly far more than just the five senses that we read about in school. We're learning that we are in touch with more than that. I can prove that. I think it'll be more difficult to disprove that than it would be to prove that. That's the way it goes.
Right.
So we have all of that played out for us all the time. But probably, and maybe this is what you're about, is that we don't pay enough attention to what the dream state is telling us.
I think many people don't. I think they dismiss the dreams as being irrelevant or with no meaning because they don't understand it.
Yeah.
And what people don't understand, they dismiss as irrelevant, but it's really a statement of their own ignorance. Because dreams have a different kind of a language. It's the language of symbols. It's the language... It's like learning a foreign language, where dreams defy the laws of logic. You can talk to a canary in a dream. You can breathe underwater. You can swim with whales. You can fly with the eagles.
Go through space.
You know.
Travel at the speed of light.
Exactly.
Play piano concertos.
You know, Bill, when you said the speed of light, when Einstein was 12 years old, he had a dream that he was on a magic carpet, a sled, and the sled was speeding through the universe. And as the sled sped up, the stars in the universe started to bend. And he said that he spent the rest of his life describing and elaborating this dream.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of discoveries have been made in dreams.
Well, Nikola Tesla You know who he was?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't dare go to bed without a notepad behind him. Right there.
I know.
And he quite often wrote in that notepad and never even remembered writing in the notepad. And it was quite often a great adventure for him to wake up in the morning and to find out what he had written.
Really?
And what he wrote gave us things like the electric generator and the alternating current, the electromagnetic wave that we use at this radio station and television station. Just a few minor inventions along the way.
Right. And I'm sure there are many others that we don't know about.
He alluded to a bunch of them, and so did Einstein. Einstein, Tesla, these people. Quite candid about the great respect they had for the dream world.
Einstein called it his imaginative side. He said, to know is nothing, to imagine is everything.
Don't imagine, you're not going to get anywhere. I mean, if you can't imagine anything other than the world we're in right now, it's going to stay the way we are. Which now, of course, will bring on mass suicide.
Right.
We do have to constantly be doing it. So we're tapping upon areas of creativity which are quite spiritual. And we're tapping upon problem solving. Because there's always a way to solve a problem, and we usually have that problem solved somewhere within our psyche. But we don't let it out, and perhaps this is our own way of letting that out. Can we solve problems in the dreams?
Oh, absolutely. I actually did my PhD thesis on this. And the title is Problem Solving Through Dreams. I took several hundred subjects and had them select a very difficult problem that had existed for a long time, something they had worked on. And a major percentage of these people, through the process of dream incubation, is trying to stimulate a certain type of dream, plus the use of hypnosis, a major portion of these subjects were able to resolve certain issues, or at least see the problem in a new perspective or a new light. So certainly, people can program their dreams. I think one should try and solve their problems consciously. We're made to live consciously. And when you get stuck, put it aside and allow your subconscious mind to work for you. The old expression, sleep on it.
Was not a dumb expression.
Absolutely.
It came from a lot of wisdom and a lot of human experience.
Yeah.
And perhaps we're just better able to define it these days. But there is a way to not necessarily program the dreams so much, but to program yourself to recall the dreams and understand what they're saying.
Yes, not even program dreams per se, but program a specific dream on a certain subject. Not this is the type of dream or the exact dream I want to have. But let's say I want a dream regarding this relationship or a dream regarding this metaphysical question that I've been struggling with. More the subject, and then the unconscious will present to you information on that particular area.
Well, it seems that most people have a problem remembering the dreams. Mm-hmm. Most likely, most of us dream every night during periods of our sleep.
Yes.
We just don't remember them.
That's right.
Is there a way to learn how to remember them? Is there something that we can...
A technique.
A programming, because we've obviously programmed ourselves not to.
Well, I think we'd be overwhelmed if we remembered all of our dreams.
There's
we would be overwhelmed.
Reason.
Two hours. We dream 2 hours each evening. And as the evening goes... As we go through the evening, the dream periods get longer until right before awakening, the dream is 30 minutes to an hour.
I don't know if you can take 2 hours of television.
No.
Can't you take 2 hours of a dream?
Oh, it's just the material would be overwhelming. I think that you couldn't handle all that material, Bill.
Well, that's true. Television's not giving you much material.
Right.
A lot of visuals and a lot of sound, but not much material.
I think the first thing to do is that whenever you have a dream, record it, number one.
Can we get into some of those techniques before we get to our call?
Yes.
But before we do that, I have a technique.
All right.
It's called How to Keep Us All Alive and Well on KABC. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind with me in applying his art and skills and craft and education, profession, to this fascinating world of dreams. And I know you want to talk to him about dreams. We're going to talk just a little bit about technique, and then we want to talk to you. Let me give you the numbers so you can get into us. All of our numbers, as you know, end in talk. T-A-L-K.
Oh, nice to talk.
Well, I'll have to talk to the lady that's came in. What can we do to better access the volumes of most likely important information that is being played back to us each night in our dreams?
There are several things, Bill. The first thing is suggest yourself before you go to sleep, as you're lying down, that tonight you're going to dream, not only dream, but recall, get up, and write it down. And when you do have a dream, no matter what time the awakening occurs, record it. Because if you don't, you're just telling the unconscious, I'm not taking you seriously. Also, when you awaken in the morning and you don't remember a dream, lie still and keep your eyes closed, because a dream may be right there. You don't want to open your eyes and think about what's coming up the next day or what I did the previous day. Just lie still and ask yourself, what am I feeling? Very softly. And what was I dreaming? And just don't move for 2 or 3 minutes. If nothing comes back in 2 or 3 minutes, chances are you did not recall a dream. Drink 2 or 3 glasses of water before you go to sleep, because frequent awakenings during the evening will help you recall dreams. My last technique is flawless. If you are the type that really wants to remember dreams, give up something until you recall a dream. Give up smoking, give up coffee, even give up sex, give up television, the movie.
Are dreams really that important?
Well, I honestly, myself, Bill, do not feel quite right if I go too long without remembering a dream. It's almost as if just remembering the dream seems to release certain energies. It seems to have an effect on me. The fact that I dream is the most significant thing. The fact that I remember the dream is the next helpful thing. And then thirdly, when I attempt to understand the dream, it's just an added addition to what I already know. So those, I think, are probably the best techniques.
Well, I like what you say. Now, let's take the life of most everybody. They get up in the morning. This is kind of a standard life, right? Go through their morning ritual, go to work, and then they come home and do whatever they do in the evening and go to bed. Now, what's more fun? The things that happened in your dream or that routine that you went through? But what will we spend time remembering? That routine, which generally is quite a bore. Well, unless you have an exciting one.
Well,
dreams are more fun.
Well, if you're leading a... That's an interesting point you just made. Because one function of dreams is they try and compensate the conscious mind, which is if you go too far in one direction, the dream will give you the opposite point of view. But if you are dreaming about an unhappy situation, let's say your job is boring, your relationship is a drag, and so on and so forth, and you're dreaming about these things, you're at the stage where you're becoming overloaded. Your unconscious mind is letting you know that you need to have some diversion, some balance. And the compensatory function is not working. So people who are in bad situations, who dream about them, usually need to do something else. They did dream studies during World War I in the trenches. As long as men on the Western Front dreamt about being back home with their girlfriends, their wives, their families, their children, they were stable. As soon as they started to dream about being under combat, being under fire and life-threatening situations, they often snapped and were sent back home.
Yeah, they had to deal with it 24 hours a day that way.
That's right. Yeah.
So the dreams offer an escape, a way out, probably a home.
Yes, a balance.
Probably a dream. Interesting how the ancients who put together this language in their own way knew what they were doing. But we do need to pay attention to them, and there are techniques to them. And they mean a lot to us, and you've studied a lot about those. And I see the calls are lining up that they have a... You like to talk about dreams.
Oh, absolutely.
You just told me that you never get tired of listening to dreams.
Right.
Well, I have an idea that you're not going to get tired here tonight with us on Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's KABC. Dr. Otto Bernard is with me. It's dream time. I'm quite often accused of being in 24 hours a day. The dream state, but there's There's more to that. Thank goodness there are dreamers in this world.
Daydreamers.
Daydreamers and nightdreamers. Or otherwise, I don't think anything would ever get off center. It would probably go the other way. Okay, Al, you're on. Welcome aboard. Hello, Al. Erstwhile.
I think we lost Al.
No.
There he is.
Yes. Hello, Bill.
I just dreamed that I touched the button.
Hello, Bill and Dr. Bernard. I enjoyed meeting you Tuesday night, Bill.
Thank you. Were you there?
Yes, I was there.
Oh, we had a dandy time.
That's the only way I met you, was being there. How can I say this? Of what I've heard, I can relate to about a sixth of it.
You're doing pretty good.
The other five-sixths, I'm not with it. For one thing, the dreams that I have, what can I say, unearthly.
Can you give us an example?
If I could, I would have written them down on the pad that I've had next to my bed for at least 15 years.
What do you mean by unearthly?
They are usually of a subject that I cannot associate with in reality.
Welcome to Open Mind. Open your mind. What is the subject?
They are not anything that I can put my finger on. The colors are different.
Can you
colors I have are different. The sounds I have are different.
Mm-hmm. What kind of work do you do, Al?
I have many hats. I have been a radio announcer and disc jockey. I was with the brewing industry for 24 and a half years. I have
you
had my own band.
Got two problems right there. A brewmaster who was a disc jockey.
Not a brewmaster.
Well, they coincide.
Anybody who knows what frozen beer is in trouble.
The few that I have had that I can relate to reality were so real that I didn't have to write them down. Mm-hmm. For instance, you touched on something about jobs. Every time I've taken a new job, I have dreamed of that job. And I remember I was a salesman for one of the large record companies for a long time. And I would call on the accounts, and I would go through the whole shot. The only thing that was different were the dream people were better than the day people. Mm-hmm. It was a nicer route.
So you've had precognitive dreams that have given you a look at what was coming up.
Only once.
Once.
Only once, and that happened a few months ago. There was a large flash. I had been up rather late the night before, and I guess I probably slept until maybe 10. And I got up and took my shower and had breakfast, and the first inkling of anything I had was when I listened to Paul Harvey, and he mentioned a catastrophe that had happened. And nothing related, but the
don't
impact...
Don't tell Paul that.
Pardon?
Don't tell Paul that.
Well, so the impact of the Harvey show was enough that I tuned on the first news program I could around 4 or 5. And when I saw the astronauts blow up, my God, that's what I saw in the dream. Mm-hmm. That's the only one I've ever had that I can recall of precognitive.
You also, did not you say a moment ago that you actually had a look at jobs that you were going to be hired for?
No.
I
was hired, and then, after I was in it three days, I would dream of that job at night.
Oh, I see. Well, obviously, you dream about what is on your mind.
Only on those occasions.
Uh-huh.
I'm at the desk or wherever I happen to be doing something pretty much like what I do, and yet very, very far removed from it.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel about that? Do you remember what the feeling was?
Usually, if I woke up and I was having the dream of, say, on the sales route, I thought, my God, why can't I have those people instead of the ones that I have?
Yeah,
and then the other ones, it was just, well, man, they just aren't the same. They're different.
Have you had a lot of different types of jobs? Do you change employment frequently?
No, the last one, as I said, I was on for 24 and a half years.
Yeah.
But during that,
yeah.
I also...
You know what I want you to do, Al?
Yeah.
Take a moment, because I'm going to have to take a moment.
All right.
And try to be a little bit more definitive, if you can, all right, when we get back to you.
All right? Mm-hmm.
Because...
But that's why I'm calling, because I can't...
Whenever you have wild dreams you can't describe... That's not given a great deal to work out here.
No.
All right. Now, I know that you can put it back together in just a little bit more concise fashion, and we'll be waiting for that in a couple of minutes. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's open.
A thing or a dream that is possibly typical. I went to another planet.
You went to another planet?
Yes. And, again, it was like... The nearest thing I can make it with was very much like the Grand Tetons, only there was no snow on. And the whole thing was very, very torn up. I saw no people. I was there for just a short while. And I thought the best thing I could do was get the hell out of there as fast as I could.
I hope that's not a precognitive dream about Earth.
I do, too. Other things that have happened.
What does that symbolism mean to you?
Well, it's just about the same. And when people dream of going to another planet, they're just going to another state of consciousness. They're going to another state of awareness. It's not so much a transmigration of the soul up to Saturn, Neptune, or Mars.
Or beyond.
Or beyond. I think it's something that's happening internally, and there's a planet is a state of mind. It's a state of awareness. And apparently, Al, you were frightened of this place. There were no people. There was no snow. It was all turned up, and you got out of there as fast as possible.
But there was no fear.
Yeah.
It was just a knowingness that this isn't the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's something that you mentioned there. No people. Very seldom do my dreams have people. Very seldom do they relate to, as you have said, swimming with a school of whales or being able to fly with bunnies or whatever. They aren't that kind of dreams. Mm-hmm. I've gone into bookstores, and not purposely, but I pass a counter that says dreams, and I look through it. And I've done this with magazines, with books, with whatever. Nothing of my dreams is anything like anyone has ever...
Do you live alone?
Okay.
Pardon?
You live alone?
Yes.
Do you spend much time with people?
Yes.
Or are you basically a loner?
No, I'm basically a loner, but I'm not a recluse.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I belong to several organizations that I like to be with, and I'm
mm-hmm.
active that way.
Yeah. The dream now may even make a little bit more sense, and maybe at the particular time, I'm not really sure. I'm just speaking very generally now,
mm-hmm.
Al, to give you some guidelines. Remember, books do not interpret dreams. And in fact, there's only one theory about dreams, and that is there are no theories. I think perhaps this dream could represent also at the time that maybe you were going through an isolated period, a period where you weren't around people a lot. You weren't reaching out to people very much. You weren't including people in your life. And you just wanted to get out of that state. And it was time to move into more relationships.
And there's a difference between, you know, rubbing shoulders with people and having people in your life.
Absolutely.
You know, you can go to the, you know, Rams game and rub shoulders with people, but they're not in your life.
Right. They're not intimately connected to you. They're not involved with you in relationship. And if you're not having a lot of people in your dreams, I would say that you probably need to connect to people more.
Well, this was happening even when I was married.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
There seems to be a message there, Al, and the music is a message for us, so we're going to take a break.
Okay.
It's a part of all of us, a part of some of us more than others that we remember, and that is that fascinating world that we live many hours out of the day. the world of the dream. And my guest tonight is Dr. Arthur Bernard. And we'll talk about your dreams, just dreams in general, as the evening goes on. But if I can digress for just a moment, Dr. Bernard, if you'll allow me to do this, there is a dream that millions of people around the world have. In fact, I suppose everybody on this planet has, and that is for world peace. And there is a program going on, and which what is recognized is the great power of the mind, a dedication of the mind, and whenever that can be channeled in some sort of a fashion together, that things can happen because of the energy of the mind. As we know, a thought is in a virtual state. It's a real thing. It has substance. It has energy. And it works. And there's a program called the Million Minutes of Peace. It's an international appeal just to dedicate a minute of your time in meditating for peace. I support that. And I would hope that you too also support that. And if you don't mind, I would like to kind of lead you in that for a moment or two with a little meditation that has been specially prepared for you. And I would like to share that with you. And let's think about what it would be like on this planet if we could devote our time and our energy toward peace rather than what we're devoting it to.
Seems that's how we got to the moon. Then you keep it in mind all of the time, and miracles really will happen. I know it's true. No matter what the odds are, if you just believe, you'll always find an answer. Just remember one minute.
thoughts count?
Beautiful.
It starts with a dream. A dream is fortified by the thought. In this group, and we want to thank Mary Eichler, Sister Mary Eichler, who was with us about 6 weeks ago, talking about the international effort, 1,000,000 minutes for peace. And all you need to do is dedicate 1 minute of your thought time in the great quest for peace. And if millions do that around the world, from every walks of life and every nation, every ethic, there is a lot of energy there that may work. And I thank you, Arthur, for letting me take time out to do that. I probably will do that again, for this is a month-going thing in which we're asking the people just to sit aside, think 1 minute, and devote 1 minute toward international peace.
That's a heart song.
That is a great song.
It's a heart song. Comes right from the heart.
Her name is Mary Eichler, and she's not making any money doing this. She is only profiting in that she may contribute toward peace. And her and all other group there, I applaud them, and I support them. Dreams is where it started, though.
Right.
As she so aptly said right in the front of that song. Thank you, Mary, for that.
We can all make our dream come true.
Probably the reason we have them, isn't it?
I think so.
There's something that needs to come true in your life, and that's played out in many kind of abstract and sometimes very deliberate forms, as dreams go. Simon, what about you?
Hello?
Yeah.
My subconscious mind and my conscious mind is absolutely in tune. Suppose I do a good deed in the daytime, I dream about it at night.
If you do a bad deed in the daytime,
I try never to do a bad deed.
Good for you.
With a name like Simon?
Like, I have a business, right?
Yes.
People give me, they come to my store, they give me, they buy groceries and give me $20, $30, $40 check. And it bounces. I go to them and ask them, I have a check here that bounces. And they say they are badly off. What I do? I give them the money and I go to the store and destroy the check. And particularly at night, I dream the same dreams.
Thank you.
And I also dream that I go out to all the poor neighborhoods and I've stuffed my pockets with $20 bills and I go to like the poor neighborhoods and I see a woman or a man poorly dressed and all, I quietly hand them $20 and I dream the same thing at night what I do in the daytime.
How do you feel in the dream?
In the dream I feel very, very happy and I feel seated. But when I see the people, when I give them the money, they feel very happy. Most of them, in fact, they tell me when I give them the money for the check, and they say, God sent you, God sent you. And their faces lighten up.
Simon, this is also for the listening audience. When the attitude of the conscious mind is right and correct, we have pleasant dreams.
And at night, I feel such good dreams.
Yes. When the conscious attitude is off, when it's wrong or it's inaccurate, then we have bad dreams, or frightening dreams, or terrifying dreams, or nightmares. But when our conscious mind is aligned with the spirit, then our dreams are very pleasant and very pleasing, and we usually wake up with a happy feeling. So whatever you're doing internally is working for you. And it's the right approach for you. I would definitely keep that up. Keep that going.
I've been doing that since I was 14 years old. I even did it during the war when people were starving to death. When I was starving, if I made $10, quietly I'd take $5 and go to see some woman that had lost her husband or something. Mm-hmm. I give it to her. And she said, who sent this money? I said, oh, some rich. I didn't want to tell her that I was giving it. I used to tell her, some rich man sent it, but he doesn't want to mention his name. But I was doing the favor.
You know, Simon, that song was for you.
It was.
Absolutely, Simon. You're fulfilling the meaning of the song that was just played.
You know, I'm in business here in Beverly Hills for 24 years. I don't know if not one person hates me.
Yeah.
How can they, Simon?
Well,
you're telling us an accurate picture of yourself.
You're a good dream, Simon, to a lot of people.
It's not because you're giving away money. That has nothing to do with
it. Because I feel sorry, because I've seen life during the war, starving to death.
You're giving away love, Simon.
Yeah.
You're sharing love, and people respond to that. You touch people's heart.
Simon, you made it worthwhile to come to work tonight.
And I wish other people would do the same thing. They'd be much happier in life. They don't feel sick. They feel, always feel good inside, you know.
Well, the best way to do that, Simon, is just set an example. And I guess you're doing that.
As the song said, it starts with me.
Same thing
starts
now
with
I have,
me. It starts with one.
Our thoughts and our actions.
The same thing now. I have a son, 30 years old, and he said, Dad, I'm bored to work in the society. Go ahead. Go and do charity work. And he does 30 charities, absolutely voluntary. He spends about 12 hours there doing voluntary work. Not one or two, about 30 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, very happy with what he's doing.
Very good. Spiritual people are happy people. In fact, I think spiritual people, truly spiritual people, are the happiest people I know.
Sounds like you're one of those, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
I appreciate you sharing that with us. That was just a perfect follow-up of that marvelous song.
Have a very happy night.
You seem to be a song yourself.
Thank you.
Okay, Simon. You know, you said something in that that rings my chain. And certainly it's been a theme of what we have talked about here over the last 7 or 8 years, about the alignment of our own personality with the personality of our spirit. Mm-hmm. We came into this world with something to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
We came in as very spiritual beings. And quite often it seems like that we want the spirit to serve the physical being rather than the way it should be, and that is the physical being serving the needs of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And you just said something I'd never heard before, that if you don't have that alignment between your spiritual being or your high self or whatever the terminology you want to be using there in the world that you're living in, that you are going to suffer in all kinds of ways, and the dreams are telling you that.
Yes.
Hey, I thank you for that. That makes an awful lot of sense to me.
Thank you.
We're on Open Mind tonight. Dr. Arthur Bernard is with me. Our subject is dreams on KABC. Paul was our first caller this evening.
Yes, there's one, just one other thing I'd like to say about that dream of the planet where that was all torn up and there was no people, because this may have come up more than once. Sometimes you can get a lot out of a dream by noting what is missing in the dream. And what was missing in this dream were people. And that may be at that particular time what was missing in Al's life, and I think all of us can relate to that at some time or another, where we just get so wrapped up in our own thing, get so self-centered within our own issues, that we tend to forget humanity. And I know that whenever I get into that place, whenever I feel cut off or depressed, I get on the phone, or I tell my wife to get on the phone, call somebody, make plans, because just to touch someone. I always think of that song that they sang in the Olympics, reach out and touch someone.
I thought that was a commercial for Bell Telephone. I shouldn't touch you with a bill.
Well, when I saw it in the Olympics, it was I think it had a deeper meaning. So that's what I wanted to mention about Al's dream.
That was a poignant moment.
Right.
I have a way of dropping that in. You know, if you want to be enlightened, you got to lighten up. Dr. Peoples taught me that.
Yeah.
That was a poignant moment when she sang that song.
Oh, yeah.
I replay that over and over again when I recorded that, and that whole mm-hmm. Olympic experience was something that should never be forgotten. But mm-hmm. That's a tearjerker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It touches deep within us.
And it was touching all of those people from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
all nations and nationalities. It was just the David Walter perfect right song thing under the circumstances.
Right.
I hope that helps you a little further, Olive, if you're still with us. Well, let's see what Steve has on his mind. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing, Bill?
Well, so far, so good.
Good, Dr. Bernard. Wonderful show.
Hi, Steve.
I'm a little nervous here, so bear with me.
I got to be a disc jockey tonight, you know, so.
Ah, good. Wonderful. Dreams are fascinating to me. I dream at least twice a night. And I've noticed that in a lot of the dreams that I have, the people in the dreams I don't recognize. And I've read some articles and books lately, and some of them have suggested that these people could be spirit guides or such. What do you think about that?
Well, could you be a little bit more specific? Are there a lot of people? Are there individual people?
Well, you know, it depends on the dream.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, just a couple of people.
Just a couple of people.
And, you know, I do have, naturally, I have dreams of people that I know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you want to talk about spirit guides, I think there's a different sense or a different feeling if you believe in that. I've had several people that have had dreams of, quote, spirit guides, and the guides come as in a guru, or as a monk, as a priest. It's something really striking and unusual. In general, though, when you...
One that likes my car. You don't care about me, but likes my car.
Steve, in general, though, when you meet people in a dream that you don't recognize, they generally represent aspects of yourself, qualities about you that are still stranger to you, that you're still not totally familiar with. You haven't quite recognized these aspects. And it's important to look at the individual that you're meeting in the dream and describe that person and what is that person like, what sense do you have about them, because they could represent the new part of you that you don't quite recognize yet. It could represent your growing edge, new things that you need to integrate, incorporate, or become aware of.
Well, I feel that I'm so fortunate to be able to dream at least once a night and remember it.
Absolutely.
That I should write these down, and I'm really disappointed with myself that I don't write down my dreams because, I understand, like you're saying, I could maybe learn something from it.
Oh, you could learn a tremendous amount.
Yeah, I'm going to get on the phone.
Well, let me suggest to you, if writing them down is too difficult, Steve, why don't you just record them?
Mm-hmm.
Have a tape recorder. Put the mic underneath your pillow, and then you don't even have to turn the light on. Open your eyes. Just reach in, flip the mic on, and record the dream. And then later, if you want to put it in a book.
So that you can get one of those Walkmans that records.
Right. Yes.
You know.
Right. Yeah, something anyway. Well, thank you very much. A great show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve, for joining us and being interested in dreams.
I'm interested in all your topics.
Are you going to give a minute for World Peace?
Definitely, and that was a great song. Too bad it couldn't be number one on the Billboard chart.
Well, I tell you what, we'll play it again.
Yeah. I'd love to hear it again.
We will play it again. In fact, I'll play it all this month.
Yeah, get your sister station to play it over there.
It doesn't rock enough.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you very much.
But maybe we can talk him into playing at a KLOS because the moment is enormously special. Thank you, Steve.
You might appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I'm Bill Jenkins. We have Dr. Arthur Bernard with us tonight. We're talking about dreams. But last week, Glenn Falkenstein, who was a mentalist of note, was on with us for a few minutes, and we were talking about the project that is underway at the Great Pyramids in Egypt, where they have discovered three new chambers in the larger of the pyramids, the one in the middle. Cheops. And the idea was that they were going to drill like an inch and an eighth or an inch and a quarter hole through the rocks into it, and then put fiber optics into it and look into the chambers. And Glenn told us what they were going to find in the chambers. In one, they were going to find a boat with a number of artifacts and perhaps some jewelry and things in it. In the second one, they were going to find a sarcophagus with a mummy of a small child in it and other artifacts. And in the third one, he found it difficult, but they're going to find a lot of artifacts and documents, which will lead to some amazing discoveries. On top of that, the whole project was supposed to have been over already. Glenn told us that they were going to have a great deal of difficulty, first of all, in the physical fact of drilling. And secondly, there were going to be some political and, union problems with the crew that are involved. Well, the drill bits, as of Monday, weren't working. Just as Mr. Falkenstein told us, they have not gone very far with this project at all. They certainly have not drilled into the chambers as they intended to have done at this time. And we don't know about the other problems they're having with people, so we're scouring the newswire to find out. But I did want to keep you up to date in Kansas City as to the Falkenstein look into those chambers. And it will be interesting to see how correct he is once they get their fiber optics in there and begin to look at all of these things, a boat, a sarcophagus, and they're going to have to get into the third chamber to get those maps and things if Glenn is indeed right. Was he dreaming?
I think it's more than that.
He's touching something else, isn't he?
Probably.
An interesting man. You can call him and on his answering machine, and you just think your message and leave your number.
And he calls you back.
I don't know if I'd want him to call me back. You certainly want to be on his good side.
Oh, absolutely. And as long as I don't know him, I am on his good side.
We will have him on the show here sometime in November. It's better to have him on the show and my friend than... than doing whatever he can do. You know, he can really get me into a lot of trouble, so I'm going to cultivate that friendship with great gusto. Okay, Margaret, you're on.
After my father passed away, about a month after he passed away, I had a dream where I was standing in the kitchen looking out the window, and he was standing behind me, and he told me, the only thing he said is that he said was, "I'm very sorry," and that was all he said in the dream, and it was as if I were above looking down at all this. And after I woke up, I mean, the way he looked, he just looked so peaceful and so calm, and just everything about him, he was just like a person that I really didn't know, because my father was an alcoholic and he was very abusive. That's the type of life, you know, childhood I grew up in. But after that dream, it was as if, is it possible, you know, that dream has always boggled my mind, because...
Margaret, do you think that he was actually there visiting you? That you were in his presence as a spirit?
I believe that it was him, that it wasn't a dream, but I...
Mm-hmm. That there was a spirit connection.
Yes.
Well, what would he mean when he said, "I'm very sorry"? What would he mean by that?
Well, I feel that it would be the way he... Because of the childhood of how miserable it was, almost, you know, because of the way he was. Like I said, he was an alcoholic and he was very abusive, and I feel that he was just asking for my forgiveness.
Yeah. And have you forgiven him?
Yeah, I have.
This is a very, very sensitive issue to you, and I can feel the emotion. You have forgiven him. You have released him.
Yes, I have.
When did you have the dream? How long ago was this?
Well, it was about a month after he passed away. He passed away 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you're sorry for? Is there anything that you would want to apologize to him about?
I think that I just more or less... I just saw him as a person. I didn't view him as my father. I when I was younger, I really disliked him. And after I got married and moved away, I just more or less kind of just felt sorry for him, but yet I didn't particularly care for him, you know.
And after the dream, what were your feelings about him?
It was almost like... It wasn't him, you know, it was the alcohol. It wasn't,
right.
You know, there was a,
right.
Something that had possessed him, that wasn't my father, the alcoholic.
Right. It was the alcohol that made him into that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it almost seems to me that he came to help you work it out, to work out the negative feelings towards him, to work out the bad feelings, that he actually came to release you of the bad memories that you could have been left with. And so, in a sense, he liberated you from having to carry those feelings, those negative feelings, into the future of your life. I think a lot was worked out. And at some level, the two of you must be very, very close. Even though in the conscious life, there was a lot of distance and some anger and resentment, that at some deeper level, perhaps even without the alcohol, that the two of you were very much connected. And it's interesting he came to you in the kitchen, because the kitchen is the place usually where the family center is focused. It's the place where the family prepares food. It's the place where the family, in a sense, is united. So I think it's a very healing dream. You know, Margaret, many people have told me that when a person has passed on, they have a similar dream as this. I'm sure many of the listeners that you're holding me back,
And she woke up from that dream, and she was almost like she had worked through the grief. And so I think your dad was helping you work through your grief by saying that he was sorry. And I'm sure he was sorry that he could not have been more to you, closer, more connected, more loving, more kind. But I think he gave you a gift.
Yeah.
I'm sure he could not apologize when he was alive.
No.
It was very hard for him.
It was.
Yeah.
So when he wasn't drinking, it was like he would almost not even look, you know, straight at you. He was always avoiding, you know, and then when he was drinking, it was just so horrible.
But the real him, Margaret, the real him came through in the dream. And I think you realize that inwardly.
That dream is just, you know, when I think of him, I think of the way he looked in it.
Absolutely. And that's the real him. And those are your real feelings. So thank you very much for sharing that.
Thank you very much.
Did that help you, Margaret?
Yeah, it helps me a lot.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Margaret, he understands that there is a psychology of the spirit as well, it seems like. And maybe that spirit communication for so many of us, although there are other avenues, I think, when you get a little more involved, is the dream. Can I digress for just a moment? We have some interesting things that are going to happen here coming up in the next couple of weeks. Tom Bearden and John Vidini next week will be talking about the frontiers of science. You'll find out some very startling evidence of how perhaps the Challenger did not go down all by itself. That it had a little help along with the three Ariane missiles, the Deltas, and the Titans that couldn't get up there, from a man who ought to know. And the week after that, things spiritual, Ramtha will be here. Jay-Z Knight will be in studio, and Ramtha will come forth. So that ought to be quite fascinating for those of you that are in the world of transmediumship. Right now we're in the world of dreams of Dr. Bernard, and with us is Renee.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. I want to express my appreciation for your show. I listen to it very often.
Thank you very much.
Very informative. I had a dream that I remembered very clearly about my two fingers being severed from my right hand. They were my middle finger and my ring finger. I was at work at some place that was unfamiliar to me, with people that I'm not familiar with, but yet I was comfortable with them. And I looked down, and on this pillow, this white pillow, laid my two fingers, cleanly severed with no blood. And I was so stunned to see my fingers there because I hadn't noticed that they were missing. And I remembered talking to someone about that. I said, oh, my fingers are off. And they said, well, how long have they been off? And I said, I just noticed it. And they said, well, as long as it's under 12 hours, it's all right, because you have 12 hours in which you can bring them back to a hospital, and they can sew them back on, and the nerves will be joined, and everything will be okay. And then I felt relief that I could take care of my fingers. And then I said to myself, well, I think what I'll do is just go back to work, and I'll just handle this within the 12 hours. And that's what I did. And towards the end of those 12 hours, within that time frame, I looked at my hand, and I had noticed that my two fingers had grown back to their full length. And I noticed that when I looked on the pillow, there were my other two fingers. And that dream just stayed with me. I had a sequel to that dream. But
first dream is enough.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah. But when I had discussed it with someone, I dreamt another dream about someone else that had no limbs from their knees down, and I didn't notice that for a long time.
Renee, was this the dream? It took place at your work?
Yes, in a place that I normally work by myself, and I was working with people.
You normally work alone, but in the dream you were working with people.
Yes.
What kind of work is it?
That I do, or that
you do?
Oh, I'm in sales right now.
A telephone sales?
Oh, no. I'm in drapery and alternate window treatments. I sell that.
Mm-hmm. Do you like your work?
Yes.
Are you hassled at work at all?
Yes, it's very, there's some craziness involved in it, yes.
What kind of craziness is involved?
Well, I'm new at this job. I've been there for about 5 weeks. And as far as it being orientated towards being organized, it seems as if it takes forever to get something done that's basically very simple. But the people that I work with, it doesn't seem that I can coordinate with them without it being a long span of time. Sometimes things are not resolved, and I find that when I'm away from the store, that I do better.
Mm-hmm.
That, so now it kind of, I want to use the word sever.
Say that again now. I want you to say that again.
I kind of severed myself. I'm thinking in terms of I will, you know, take myself away from there and just work on my own, separate myself from the craziness.
That's exactly what you have to do. Because if you sever yourself from that situation, you will grow something new that will replace it. You see, the dream is obviously connected to your work and the frustrations and the fact that sometimes, without those two fingers, your hand... In fact, you didn't even notice that your fingers in the dream had been severed. You just saw them on the pillow. So,
oh, but you know what? I had this dream before I started this job.
Well, it's a precognitive dream. It's a dream that probably even predicted the situation. But without the two fingers, you said it was the index finger and the ring?
No, it was the middle finger and the ring finger.
The middle finger and the ring finger. Are you married?
Can I have
no.
any precognitive here while everybody gets here?
No, I'm not. I'm divorced.
Can you hang on just a second?
Sure.
I have this precognitive thing.
Sure.
But we'll be right back with you. So don't you go away, Ray.
All right.
The 19 is often representative of the work hand, the doing hand.
Yes.
And it's the active hand. The left hand is a much more passive hand. The other thing was that I think that you need to allow, and it relates to the job situation, I think you need to sever some connection so that something new can take its place. Something new can replace it. Something new will grow. If you have a fear of letting go of a certain aspect of your job, the dream is encouraging you to release it because something will regenerate.
Mm-hmm.
A new appendage will grow.
Mm-hmm.
Are you afraid to leave the work situation and kind of spring out on your own?
No, I've been self-employed for 17 years.
Yeah.
So this is another form of self-employment. So it's the same form, different
yeah.
type of which related work, but,
right.
you know...
Right. Well, I think that you need to follow through on your idea, the one that you mentioned about removing yourself from the office. We all have to, at some time or another, make a choice to change, because dreams are encouraging us to change. You get rid of two old fingers, and a change occurs, and two new ones take its place. Change is life, Renee.
All right, Renee?
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be back after the news daily. Pure entertainment. I want to take just a moment to play a little bit of this song again. Our guest is Dr. Arthur Bernard, who is an expert on dreams. By the way, Arthur, if someone wanted to reach you, find out about their dreams, or, you know, find out more about you, what you do, do you have a phone number and address where we can get to you? I know you do, but I want to just... I just found him on the street walking down here. I had somebody for the show, and I just found out he's a good guy.
Yeah, it's Arthur Bernard, 14724... Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, and the telephone number is area code 818-990-5490.
And you're a psychiatrist?
Psychologist.
All of you are crazy.
But the crazy ones are interesting.
It's the crazies that are running the institution, right?
Absolutely.
That's the truth around KABC, you see. But...
But and you do specialize in dreams. You've made quite a study.
Well, actually, what I specialize in is individual and couple counseling. I do a lot of marriage counseling also, but and then also the dream work. And I find that the dreams just give me so much more valuable information than a person can give consciously. You know, a person can say this, this, and this, but then when they bring a dream, it's so accurate. For example, just to give you a quick example, in couple counseling, a wife will come in and say, or a husband comes in and says, I dreamt my wife died last night. Now, the relationship, they've been married for 32 years. They have a wonderful relationship. Why would he dream of her dying? He's not angry at her. He has no hate, no resentment towards her. And as we started to talk, what came out of it was that he was too dependent on her. And that the dream was trying to kill her so he could be more independent and self-sufficient. And the one question I asked him was, if your wife was dead, what would happen? Well, I'd have to do this, 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 and this. So very often in couple counseling, a dream will show the essence of the problem. One couple I was working with came in, they had a marriage problem, and the wife dreamt that she was in bed with the husband. And her father and his mother were also in bed. The four of them were in bed together. So as a diagnosis, we knew where the problem was immediately.
It was a little party that got out of hand.
So I just find dreams are just so valuable. The psychic facts and dreams are true. Dreams are truth. Dreams are facts.
Why don't they speak English?
Well, they do speak a language, and it's much older than English.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were dreaming long before we had language.
True.
And dreams speak the language of symbols. And one symbol can sum up a whole lifestyle problem. One symbol can represent so much more than a sign or language can attest to.
Mm-hmm.
So dreams, nature is economical, and I think it tries to get the message across in as quickly a way as possible. Nature does not like to waste energy. Therefore, a one brief dream, a symbolic dream, can represent a whole life issue that a person is struggling with. And I think that's why dreams, quote, don't speak in English.
All right. Well, I'm glad they do, because English... You can say one thing and mean another. Speaking of dreams, I know we all have a dream of world peace. There's an international appeal for you to spend a moment with it.
A dream, simple as it seems, that's how we got to the moon. And then you keep it in mind all of the time, and miracles really will happen. I know it's true, no matter what the odds are, if you just believe, you'll always. Just remember, 1 minute becomes an hour.
for Peace. It's an international appeal that is going on all over the world right now. It's supported by the United Nations and most every government in the world. Our leading corporations and political leaders the world over are saying there is great value in your thoughts and you putting aside a moment of meditation and in thought about international peace. And our great thanks to Sister Mary Eichler, E-K-L-E-R, who was a guest on the show here about 6 weeks ago for that marvelous little piece of music. We just may play it again, Arthur.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
It's a hit song.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
On top of all of that, that's better than most of the stuff you hear going around today. Okay, Sam, you're on.
Yes, good evening. I don't remember my dreams. With one exception, it's one dream that is quite traumatic and unpleasant to me, but it keeps recurring, you know, so that's the only one I remember. And I would like Dr. Bernard to interpret it for me. But before I tell the dream, I would like to ask him some questions about him. For example, do you teach your patients how to interpret their dreams, or are they totally dependent on you?
No, I teach them how to interpret their dreams. I don't have time to do this on the radio to teach you how to interpret your own dreams.
I understand.
I think the best interpreter of a dream is the dreamer. Many people shy away from that because they when they first approach it, they think it just doesn't make sense. It's a puzzle that no way are they going to figure out. No, I help people. I teach them a lot of different techniques. I give them a lot of different tools to work with dreams. I even sometimes hypnotize someone and let them interpret their own dream in the hypnotic state. And they usually are a lot more accurate than I am. What I'm doing on this radio show is more detective work, kind of giving you some general clues and general ideas.
Now, how do I benefit by remembering my dreams?
How do you benefit from that?
Yes.
Well, I think the first thing is remembering a dream itself can change you. Just the experience of waking up and having a pleasant dream can leave you during the daytime with a carryover feeling that makes you much more optimistic, much more hopeful, and so on. The other benefit you can get from dreams is if you try and understand them, understand what the message is, and then apply it in your life. Like the previous caller, Renee, or even Al, if they can take the message that dream was trying to state, Renee's dream about losing something but then having it regenerated, she needs to now act. She needs to make a decision. The unconscious is presenting her with certain information. It's saying, look, if you do this, this is going to happen. But nothing happens unless your conscious mind puts it into action. So you need to put into action what you learn. I know many people, in fact, some mental hospitals are full of people who understand their dreams and they have magnificent dreams, but nothing ever happens in their life because they can't apply it.
Is there a risk, Dr. Bernard, that a person can interpret a dream erroneously and...
No risk at all.
Pardon me?
Sam, no risk at all.
I see.
If it's interpreted incorrectly, a person knows that and senses that, and you'll have a correcting dream after that. And I thought that the other question you were going to ask me, is it dangerous to work on dreams? No, I think it's dangerous not to work on your dreams.
And no, my other question to Bernard is, in your interpretations of dreams, how poetic is your interpretation and how scientific?
Oh, there's no science in this.
Sam, no science at all.
Sam, this is artwork. That's a pun. No pun intended. My name is Arthur. No. You can't say...
No pun whatsoever. Right.
Sam, science, if it was scientific, then every dream that had this particular symbol under these particular conditions would mean the same thing. You and I can have the same symbol, and it can mean something totally different. This is artwork. It's creative. When we're awake, we all look at the same physical world. When we're asleep, each one of us is in our own creative world.
I think we said something earlier that dreams are like fingerprints.
Well, exactly.
If you and I dreamed exactly the same dream, they would have probably totally different meaning.
Yeah. Sam, this is a work of art. It unfolds. As you work on it, it unfolds.
I would like to mention my dream because, you know, as I said, it's very dramatic to me. But I want to ask you just one last question. Before I should tell you about my dream, is your own set of value? I mean, so in other words, in your interpretation, you put your own set of values, your own philosophies and morals. Is that correct?
Oh no, I try not to, Sam. Sam, you have some. You're really testing me about my qualifications of working on your dream. Do you have some reluctance to share this dream?
No.
Oh, have you ever shared it before or worked on it or gotten some meaning out of it?
Well, let me tell you, maybe, this is what I dream, Dr. Bernard, is that, I'm going to die on that moment. This is what I dream.
That you're going to die?
On that particular moment of the dream. In other words, it's as if, it's like if I fail to do or not to do something,
mm-hmm.
and as a consequence, I am to die. It's like I'm condemned to die because of my failure to do or not to do something. Now that something, it may have been revealing the dream, but I don't remember it.
Okay. What nationality are you, Sam? There's an accent there, and I'm real curious about what that is.
Yes, I speak Spanish, I am not of Spanish descent or Latin descent. My folks are from Europe.
From Europe?
And not the south of Spain.
I see. From Europe.
Yes.
Well, how are you going to die in the dream?
I don't know. I don't remember. I have an over memory in real life. And I guess if you have a bad memory in real life, you also have a bad memory about dreams too. Is that correct?
You can. It can have some effect. It can have a carryover.
It seems like that's what happened to me. But what happened, Dr. Bernard, is that I wake up. I think I wake up. But not fully. I don't fully wake. And my heart pumps tremendously,
mm-hmm.
and I am very afraid, very fearful,
mm-hmm.
and I guess immediately I fall back to sleep.
Yeah.
So I never, in other words, I don't fully awake.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Sam.
And by the way, doctor,
yes.
In about 2 or 3 years that I've been dreaming this, maybe once every, I'm not sure, maybe every 2 months, every 3 months,
I see.
And just recently, maybe in the last 2 months, that I became aware that I remember that dream.
I see.
For the first time.
Right. How old are you, Sam?
It's very strange.
How old are you?
I'm 54.
54? You sound much younger.
Oh, I see.
That's all right, Sam. In my mind, I'm picturing a younger man for some reason. What kind of work do you do, Sam?
I work in an office.
Mm-hmm.
Sedentary work. I deal with people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a generic social work, so to speak.
Are you a perfectionist?
Perfectionist?
Yes.
Perhaps in some things.
Are you afraid of making mistakes?
Depends.
Are you afraid of making big mistakes?
Well, yes. Like if you are in the road,
mm-hmm.
and making a mistake can cost your life.
Mm-hmm.
I think I dream sometimes of this type of thing, like of a crash, something like that.
Yeah.
Kind of crash or something.
Yeah. Well, Sam, let me just generally say, I think what the dream may relate to. Remember, I'm just giving you some. I have a short amount of time, and I'm just giving you some general ideas here.
And by the way, I envy Simon. Simon only dreams very good things. Samuel doesn't.
Well, wait a minute. Who was Samuel in the Bible? Samuel was quite a character in the Bible too. I think I'll just give you some general ideas.
All right.
I think.
By the way, Dr. Burnett, how old are you?
I'm a little bit younger than you.
Oh, really?
52, Sam.
52?
Yes.
Oh, yes. You sound your age. No, I'm just kidding. You sound very pleasant.
He's a young guy in my book.
I love your sense of humor. Sam, I would say that, you see, because you fail to do or not do something, that you're being punished in the dream. I think it may relate to your perfectionism or to your fear of making mistakes, in the sense that maybe you make a federal case out of making a small mistake. That maybe what is happening here is that you die 1,000 deaths because of the fear of making a mistake. Not the actual mistake itself. I'm sure someone like you probably doesn't make very many mistakes. But the dream, you see, is repetitive. It happens many times. And the reason it's happening many times is because you're still dealing with the situation, whatever the conscious situation is, whatever the real world situation is, you're dealing with it the same way, and you haven't quite changed. There's some resistance to changing here. And so you're getting the message again and again and again because it hasn't quite hit home yet. I would say, if I was you, Sam, I would really test something this week. I would go to work, and I would consciously and purposely make a mistake just to see what happens.
For some of us, this comes naturally, Sam.
Dr. Burnett,
yes.
May I ask you something?
Sure.
Is it possible that if a person has, let's say, a health problem,
yeah,
could that be expressed, that health problem, in terms,
yes,
of dreams? Could that be symptomatic?
Yes, yes. If you had a health problem...
I don't know if I have it.
No. Do you worry about your health? Are you concerned about your health?
Slightly, but apparently the doctor has... doesn't, you know...
Yeah. Would you say
anything?
Would you say you're a hypochondriac? Do you have imaginary illnesses like most of us do at one time or another?
Well, no. Sometimes I have a nervous stomach.
A nervous stomach.
I have sometimes difficulty with my digestion sometimes.
Yeah.
And do you think that could reflect in bad dreams?
Yeah, but in your case, I don't think so. I really don't. I think it has to do with fear. I think what is happening here is that, for some reason, you're generating fear. You're experiencing an excess of fear. And fear is debilitating. Fear is a killer.
Yes.
Worry, doubt, and fear kill us. And we die 1,000 times when we mull over something and we create these fantasies in our mind about these disasters that are going to take place. And primarily, they are imaginary. Most of our fears, I imagine all of us listening now can relate to this. Most of our fears are imaginary. They're illusions. And when we finally turn and face them, they diminish in power. I remember a client of mine, Sam, who had a really strong, fearful situation at work, and she just could not face this. Finally, after 6 months of work in therapy, she confronted the person who was creating this fear in her. And that night she had a dream that she was running from this monster. And finally, she turned around. And the monster shrunk to a little pussycat and rubbed its body against her leg. So, you know, if you face your fears, I think they diminish in their power. And I would say that you're allowing, there's some fear in there that you just need to allow yourself to confront.
Does that help you out, Sam?
Oh, tremendously.
Because I have a fear, too. Then I'm not going to get all the commercials.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you very much.
Sam, thank you very much for talking to us. Talking about dreams, we all do dreams from time to time, and I am sure that Barbara does. What's on your mind about dreams, Barbara?
Excuse me, Barbara, could you hold on just for one moment?
Right.
There's one other comment I would like to make to Sam, perhaps to help him with this fear. Sam, think of yourself as doing the best that you can in your work situation. You can do no better. You absolutely can do no better. You're a number 10. So trust yourself.
The way to reduce a lot of that fear, Sam, is to realize that you, under the conditions that you're working, with all of your aptitude and abilities, you are doing the best that you can, and you can't be called on to do anything better. You're a number 10. So just trust yourself. Thank you.
All right.
That was very nice.
Does that help you, Barbara?
No, it doesn't.
Have you solved your problem with that?
I had a fear that I wasn't going to get on.
Never fear, dear.
But anyway, Bill, this is a wonderful show as usual.
Thank you.
I listen to you mostly every Saturday night. Dr. Bernard.
Yes.
First of all, I want to tell you you have a wonderfully soothing voice.
Thank you.
And you sound much younger than 52. Different, and I'd like to hear your interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very visual dream, and it was in color. Also, I'd like to know whether you think I had something with MSG, and I wondered whether that had anything to do with it, because sometimes it could.
With MSG?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So let me tell you the dream. I was coming down. I was in a hotel, I guess, and I found myself in a big room with lots and lots of people standing in line, senior citizens waiting to get breakfast. It was like 6:30 in the morning. It was a big, winding, long line. And I was amazed to see how well procured, you know, the women were at that hour. I don't remember how I was dressed, but I do recall that I remembered my hair being a mess. And as much as the people were there, all of a sudden they were gone. And I went back into the elevator to go up to my room. And when the door opened, I found myself outside in this great expanse, a big, wide stairway with people at different sections of it, beautiful green grass. And I noticed this man dressed in a black suit with a black, well-groomed beard. And I said, "Where am I?" I was waiting to get out of my hotel room, into my hotel room. And he said, "Well, that hotel's been partially destroyed for 10 years. Look over there." And I looked straight ahead, and I could see that it was partially destroyed. It was a white stucco building with a brown, you know, roof, and it was partially destroyed. And then my attention turned to this person, very tall, very thin, and from the face down to about the waist, it was covered over with a blue veil type of covering, sort of like pointed at the top and going down over the waist, veiled and not really sequin, but sort of like veiled. And when I woke up, I remembered the entire dream. I never wrote it down, and this was about 3 days ago, and I still remember every single detail.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's how the dream ended. Just you remembered the blue veiled covering.
This person was a very tall, mm-hmm. skinny person with a blue veiled covering,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Blue's my favorite color, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Are you married?
No, not at the present.
Do you date?
Not too much.
Would you like to date more?
With the right person, yes.
Uh-huh. how old are you, Barbara?
47.
Leave your number with the producer.
No.
All right.
You see, what do all these senior citizens represent to you? What do they mean to you, senior citizens?
Well, senior citizens are older people, but I didn't put any significance on that part of the dream.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself an older person?
Oh, no, not in the least. I get younger by the year.
You do get younger,
yes,
by the year.
And I look very young.
Uh-huh. You see, in the beginning of the dream, you're in a hotel room. A hotel room is something temporary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something permanent. And you're with a lot of people. They're senior citizens waiting to get breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Women that are coiffured. And your hair is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you make of that? All of these senior citizen women are coiffured. They're all standing in line very orderly. And your hair is a mess.
Well, I know that for the last couple of years, my life has been in
mm-hmm.
a mess and
mm-hmm.
has been slowly straightening out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the way to get it straightened out is to get out of this hotel.
Well, I have.
When did you start getting out of this hotel? Approximately when?
Well, almost 2 years ago.
About 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think now, at this time, you're ready to get into a larger expanse. The fact that you're ready and willing to leave and to go outside, and you said the outside had a great expanse.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get out often? Do you are you at home frequently, or do you go out often?
Well, I'm at home by choice, actually.
Why by choice?
Well, because I just started a new business, and I'm putting a lot of effort into that.
Well, I think that you need to go out more.
I know.
I think you need to get out and to make yourself available. You know, the hotel and the room, it's in partially destroyed. It's really not the place for you. The place for you is outside in this broad expanse. Also, the place for you is to begin to connect to a man. Now, do you make yourself available to men?
I haven't had very many pleasant experiences.
There are probably a lot of women, Barbara, who could relate to that that same statement. It's, you know, my sympathies are with you. Are you ready to now expand, you know, meeting men? Okay. How can you go about doing that?
Well, I've already put an ad in a paper.
Well, here's a chance to advertise. I don't know.
Well, I did. I advertised for a soulmate.
Bill, the name of the screen.
Bill, can she mention the newspaper? Okay, that's one way. In fact, I have several single clients that are doing that. And one of them, a woman from... No, it wasn't her. It was a friend of hers from Brentwood whose husband had divorced her. She put an ad. She was Jewish. And she put an ad in the... Oh, she did. Well, you are.
Yes.
She put an ad in the Jewish newspaper. The
Connector.
Well, either the Connector. I think it was maybe connected to the community center on Olympic Boulevard.
That's what I did.
Yeah, and she met the most astounding men. There were several dates, very exciting, stimulating men. That's one way. Another way of doing it, the reason that, I mean, I'm married, I've been married for 30 years, but I have a lot of single clients, and they give me all of this information. They help educate me about the single world. Another good way to do that is to have your friends do the work for you. Tell people that you're now interested in developing a relationship and dating and going out and so on, and let them work for you. I think that's an excellent way to do it. So you seem to have some skills in this. Well, to me, the fact that the dream is in color also means it's a heightened, kind of a heightened emotional experience, and that the dream is very significant. Usually, when you remember the color, it has more importance.
Well, usually, I don't, you know, remember dreaming in color.
Yeah.
So I thought about this person being in blue as the person that perhaps I was going to meet, the one that's unknown to me at the present.
Well, that's a possibility. The other thing is that your perception of men, the way you want to relate to men, is still somewhat veiled. There's still, I mean, it's there. You know, the man is saying, look, you can't live there anymore. Come out into the open. Live in this great expanse. Open yourself up. Make yourself available to a relationship. I think that the fact that the man was veiled, that you're still not quite clear, and that there's some uncertainty, there's just a little bit lack of clarity right now.
Unclear of what?
Unclear of yourself in relationship to men, and just how you want to go about relating, and how involved you want to be, to what degree you want to be involved, and so on. It could be someone that you're going to meet. I don't think so. I think it really has to do more with your attitude towards men right now.
What about the person that I envisioned, you know, that was in black and
all like
that?
Yeah, well, time will tell. I mean, if it's a psychic dream, you really have... It's like one of the best reasons to keep a dream journal is to write down all your dreams and then look back and see what the psychic elements are. Would a tall, thin man... Is a tall, thin man appealing to you? Is a tall...
Oh, you're asking me...
Yes. Is that your image or fantasy of a man, tall and thin?
Thin, but
well, you know, I would say the dream is very optimistic. You're going in the right direction.
I also felt that the building that was destroyed was the part of my life that was gone, you know.
Definitely the part of your life that was gone. I think it's the part of your life that may be a little bit old-fashioned.
Uh-huh.
A little bit, you know, senior citizens, you know, they're not quite as energetic or have as much energy as, you know, people that are younger. So I think that you're leaving that part, that you're putting it behind you. And you're moving out into this direction of relationships. Now,
put some energy into it. The way to make it happen is put energy into it. You know, make yourself go out and buy, two or three new outfits. Make yourself look a little sexy, a little alluring,
And call my producer.
I'm already sexy and alluring. Now,
well, you know, well, I'll tell you, Barbara, show it off. You know, but I can see one more thing. I can see that you're leaving that attitude that is representative of senior citizen. Everybody's in line. Things are orderly. Things are neat. You know.
That's what the senior citizen says.
Yeah, right. Now there's a lot more uncertainty. There's a lot more. When you leave go of certainty and alignment, you're out into new possibilities. You're out there with new openness. More things can happen to you. And it looks like you're going in the right direction.
And also, as I was waiting for you for the last hour, I was thinking about the number 10, you know, because the man said, oh, that was destroyed 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was curious to me.
And my life has been going in 10-year cycles. You know, things have been of major consequence have happened to me in 10-year cycles.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like the next 3 years are going to be very interesting ones for you.
It sounds to me like, Barbara, it may have meant that you're a number 10.
All right. I love it. I told you.
Right. It's a very positive dream.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Talking to you.
All right, Barbara. Good to have you.
Thank you.
And thank you for hanging on to get on. I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Dr. Arthur Bernard.
Don't even record it. Just stay up for 10 minutes, and it will be imprinted. You will remember it in the morning. If you go to bed within 10 minutes, before the 10 minutes time, the dream is lost. It's not imprinted. Stay up for at least 10 minutes and run it through your mind many times. You won't even have to record it. You'll remember it. Okay, Jennifer?
That's good advice. I'll try that.
All right. Thank you.
Let us know how it worked out.
I have a question.
Make it quick.
When you have a recurring dream, I have a recurring dream that's been going on for like 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that indicative of something that I haven't resolved in all of these years?
Yes. Generally, there's a certain resistance to resolving that particular issue. You know, the message keeps coming, and you keep dealing with whatever the conscious situation is, you keep dealing with it the same way. There's a certain resistance, and that's the type of dream you really need to work on.
Okay.
So your work's cut out for you.
Right.
Thank you very much for checking in with us.
Thank you.
It's open mind.
We all live with pain, and like me, you've probably...
Midnight Mark. Tom Hall will be here. Be sure to join Tom. Next week, Tom Bearden and John Bedini with me. 2 weeks from now, Jay-Z Knight will be in studio, and Ramtha. And for those of you that are Ramtha fans, you'll want to be aboard and see what Ramtha has to say to you. Dr. Arthur Bernard, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Again, telephone number and address, Hal. We can get in touch with you if you want to. Next time I have one of those silly dreams, I better stop. Over and over all the time.
Or even if you have problems with your wife. The address is 14724 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks. And the telephone number is area code 818-990-5490.
All right. Thank you very much. And if we learned anything, we learned that we need to pay attention to the dreams. Because they are tools. And what they can unlock for us and do for us. Most people don't seem to realize. Thank you for your work and bringing that to our attention and showing us how to do it. See you next week.
Thank you very much.